Richard Murdoch proposes massive federal budget cuts. Is there reality behind the politics? John Gregg kicks off his campaign for governor. Indy prepares for a smoking ban, and two metropolitan school districts head to court. That plus Condoleezza Rice in Indianapolis and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 18, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Richard Murdoch put forward his plan for cutting the federal deficit. It calls for massive cuts. Six Republicans and six Democrats are struggling to reach agreement on Capitol Hill on a proposal that would prevent automatic cuts in the federal budget. While they seek agreement on $1.2 trillion in spending reductions, Richard Murdoch is proposing cuts of $7.6 trillion, six times as much.
That would be an 18.9% reduction from the planned spending over that 10-year period. It is meaningful, serious cuts, painful perhaps.
Murdoch says he would do away with four cabinet agencies, housing and urban development, commerce, education, and energy. His opponent in the GOP primary, Senator Richard Lugar, is in favor of cuts. But the scope of the Murdoch proposal led a Lugar campaign spokesman to suggest that it's a political document.
To go and cut comprehensive agencies just without thought about consequence or reasons for being certainly calls into question of what this proposal is.
Is the Murdoch proposal practical? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, will that proposal win primary votes for Murdoch?
No, it probably will. You know, Perry wants to cut three, if he can remember which three, and Murdoch wants four. I think we just ought to eliminate Congress if we want to save money and really get back to effectiveness. It's silliness. They're going so far to the right, they're tacking so far to the right to get Republican primary votes that Lugar's even now attacking the president's health care proposal, the mandatory coverage part of that, when he was the co-sponsor in 1993 of a bill which mandated coverage. So, I mean, you're going, there's no room over there. There's no room on the right anymore for anybody.
Well, and speaking of Lugar, he met last week with a Tea Party group. He's trying to court Tea Party votes now.
Sure, he should be talking to everybody that he can talk to it, and the Republican side of things, or people are going to support Republicans. But I found it interesting that Murdoch's proposal, the more effort he makes at trying to bring attention to his campaign and the more effort he makes to try to bring national money to his effort, which is his only hope, I think, to probably pull this off because he's sure not raising it in-state at this point. Gets more irresponsible with every proposal. I mean, if you eliminate commerce, you eliminate some constitutional requirements such as the census,
yeah.
Patent, you know, so forth and so on.
Details.
And there's no provision made to do that someplace else. You eliminate energy completely. Two-thirds of that budget deals with America's nuclear mission, weapons mission, and I'm sure he didn't mean that when he said it, but he proposed it. And even if you cut the department out, you got to make that up somewhere else, so the money's still there. So you're not getting any savings, even if you move it around. So I think the effort to try to bring attention and money to his campaign, these proposals get wilder, and I think it hurts him because it becomes less credible because of it.
Well, for some perspective, Paul Ryan's budget would cut $6 trillion over 10 years.
Right.
This is $7.6 trillion. And the Ryan budget is the reason why they're looking for alternatives on Capitol Hill.
Right, and as you pointed out, Jim, I mean, the Lugar campaign, though, is reminding everybody who will listen that the senator did, in fact, vote for Paul Ryan's budget proposal, the one you just talked about. Also, they're pointing out that the senator had voted, I think, 17 times in favor of a constitutional amendment that would require balancing of the federal budget. So clearly, he's getting the message that fiscal austerity is, if he needed to get it, he's getting it now. And as we've said before, is not going to be caught off guard and is going to try everything he can to not be outflanked on the right. Although, when you do have the kind of rhetoric that came up this week and the proposals, I mean, that will attract some attention, and I'm sure some people are saying, yeah, that's exactly what we need to do. There's you know, 7 billion reasons why, or trillion reasons I need to vote for this guy. But if in fact he won the primary, this, I think these kinds of comments and these kinds of proposals clearly would come back to hurt him in a general election where you do have to defend the proposed elimination of some agencies that are very popular and do very important and in some cases, as Mike pointed out, constitutionally mandated functions.
So to what degree do voters sift through the numbers?
I don't think they do at this point, and that's really unfortunate because the audacity of this goofy proposal is indicative of what we're calling political thought these days on either end of the spectrum. This is just ridiculous when you hear the proposals that are coming out of not just Senator or Mr. Murdoch, but all along the spectrum. And what we need to find is that middle ground again, and that's what John's making reference to in a general election. If Murdoch is able to get through the primary, it will kill him in a general election because it's just too goofy for words.
Well, and even the Ryan proposal for the budget is too goofy for words. You're going to really undercut Medicare in the Ryan proposal, and Lugar was for that. And Lugar's been for mandatory care, mandatory insurance purchase. So, I mean, you get all of these things, and you say, here's his record, and then on the other hand, no, don't pay any attention to my record. I'm really to the right of Richard Murdoch. It's all right. Goofy season.
Couple other things in the Senate race this week. Reince Priebus, the National GOP chairman, was on CNN and was asked if there would be any effort to protect Lugar, and he said no, and he said that the Tea Party's done good things for the GOP. Is that expected?
Yes. I mean, I look for them not to be involved in a primary fight.
All right. Second thing is, car dealer Bob Thomas is apparently now mulling a Republican run for Senate. What would a third candidate do to the field here?
Well, I think it would be helpful to Senator Lugar. Clearly, I mean, if the argument is that if he also believes that Senator Lugar's not quote conservative enough, which is silly in its own face. Then if that's the audience he's after, that would divide up that vote even more. I mean, I think it would serve Lugar well.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think a third-party candidate in there would be to Lugar's advantage, not to his disadvantage, because it splits the less than fully rational vote that's out there attracted to Murdoch.
All right. Former Indiana House Speaker John Gregg officially launched his campaign for governor this week. Gregg held several rallies, beginning in his hometown of Sanburn in southwestern Indiana, and then heading to a rally downtown at the Indiana War Memorial. Here he told supporters that he's concerned about the state's business climate and the state of its schools.
I'm not about ideology. I'm about ideas. It's the ideas that unite us and help us move forward. It's the ideology that divides us.
Mike McDaniel, is that a message that sells?
I'm not so sure most people can tell you what that message means. I found it, you know, you give them a pass on their first announcement out of the box, and I have no problem with him talking about jobs and education. That's what everybody's going to talk about in this campaign. But I was a little surprised that he took some shots at the probable opposition right out of the box in his announcement speech. I mean, you know, the Democrats have lost every statewide office, both houses of the legislature, most of Congress, and most of the mayors now, and they still come with the same playbook of starting out of the box with the negatives, and it just doesn't serve them well. And I was kind of disappointed and surprised that he did, because that just doesn't seem like the right thing for him to be doing.
Saying that Mike Pence is a creature of Washington is not a negative. That's a fact. Well, okay? That's a fact. John Gregg's message here was less about policy than this is about who I am. And he was telling people who he is and what his background is and what his family values are and all of that. And I think it was a good message. He'll come out later with policy discussions, and there'll be a sharp differentiation between the two of them because at least John Gregg made his announcement in
John
Indiana.
Gregg.
How about that? Whoa! Has Mike Pence been in Indiana?
John Gregg spent most of his life trying to tell people that all public service is noble And now to be acting like if you served in Washington, D.C. in Congress is something less than that
I think
is absolutely outrageous.
Congress, I think serving in Congress is less than noble.
Oh, that's right.
I think Congress has completely dropped the ball in terms of
all
service.
All of them? Republicans and Democrats?
All of them. Almost all of them.
John,
yes.
Back to John Gregg. he's this afternoon benefited from a fundraiser by Bill Clinton, $5,000 ahead. I mean, he starts out as an underdog. Clearly, can he raise the money to be competitive?
Well, I think that's why you're seeing some kind of a fundraiser like this right off the start. To have the former president in, to be able to charge $5,000 a person to raise the money that they're going to raise from this, he has to do that. And he has to have a strong start, because if he doesn't, he's playing, he's beyond catch-up at that point. So he needs to really have a strong start, and fundraising is critical so that he can carry that message around.
Yeah, especially somebody from Washington.
He's from New York now.
He's not from Arkansas. All right, I'm going to give him credit, though. I mean, clearly an election should be about policy and what people, their record of service and what they want to do, but we got to give him high marks. We'll be frivolous for a minute about his campaign logo with the mustache.
That's
and so forth. He got a lot.
Is that frivolous? I mean,
I think it's a very smart thing to have a logo,
Cosmetics mean a lot in politics when you get to the statewide level,
look,
right?
I think what's important about it is it's
memorable.
Every
candidate who's had a mustache has been advised to shave it, and he's decided to make the mustache. I'm not running for office.
Look, it's memorable.
He's making that his logo.
It's memorable. People, even Atlantic Monthly, which isn't prone to writing stories about people's mustaches, in the heartland of America, did something on it this week. So it's memorable. People are going to remember that. Oh, that's the guy with the mustache. Unfortunately, they may pay more attention to that than the policies of either that he's offering or Mike Pence is offering, which is a sad commentary. But hey, you got to give him credit for coming out with something that is memorable
genuine.
And catchy.
He's his own person. He always has been, and he's going to go to the drummer that he hears, and that's a good thing.
That includes wearing dark glasses at your
house. Well, yeah, that's true. I did note that one.
All right. There's a new push for a tougher smoking ban in Indianapolis, one that would throw out many of the current exemptions that include hotels, bars, and bowling alleys. Every other workplace has been off limits. It would ban smoking everywhere except for in cigar and hookah bars, tobacco shops, and veterans halls. City County Council President Republican Ryan Vaughn is proposing it in advance of the Super Bowl.
You know, there's been an expressed desire on the part of the next council to have something in effect by the time of the Super Bowl. And in order to do that and comply with state law, we actually need to pass this in December.
All right, Ryan Vaughn came out with that, and then a couple days later, we got a bipartisan proposal that's more strict, that would ban smoking at cigar and hookah bars and veterans clubs. Where's this headed?
This is headed to some kind of a compromise, and I think you'll see. I think you'll see a compromise on that. You got to give Ryan Vaughn credit for being clever here and getting out in front of it and trying to define the terms, because he's soon not going to have that opportunity, and he really doesn't have a chance of passing this within his own caucus without the Democrats who support a more comprehensive ban. So he's gotten himself some leverage, and he hopes to make use of that leverage so that he can minimize the comprehensive nature of this as much as he possibly can.
Well, what Ryan Vaughn is saying is that this is the only proposal that the mayor will sign. And the mayor has been adamant that he's for a stricter smoking ban, but he won't tell veterans that they can't smoke at the VFW.
Right, and the way things are set up, he has the ability to veto it, obviously. Now, the city county council could try to muster enough votes to override it, but as a practical matter, that's not going to happen.
Well, they say they've got 18 votes, and it takes 20 to override it.
Right. So, I mean, governance has to involve, as John suggests, some practicality, some compromise, and that's why I think you'll probably see something that is enacted before it takes effect in time for the Super Bowl, but does exempt retail establishments, tobacco real estate establishments, retail establishments, not real estate. And then, of course, if everything goes according to what the mayor wants to see, it would also exempt the fraternal organizations.
Angela Mansfield, who along with Ben Hunter, put forth the more comprehensive plan, says she's not that concerned about the Super Bowl. She's more concerned about having a strict smoking ban. Why is the Super Bowl important?
I don't think it is. I'm not sure why that comes into this equation. I don't think you can get it done in time with the 30-day grace period that you always have in place anyway, to have this done in time to have it be in effect at the Super Bowl. But I think this proposal is a reasonable proposal because of the fraternal order situation. I think that's one that those folks have earned the right, if they want to do this in their private organizational clubs, to do this. And I think that's a good compromise. The rest of it's pretty extensive. And I think we're going to end up with something pretty close to what Ryan Vaughn is proposing.
Clean air advocates say that even though veterans have won the right to smoke in their private clubs, they're worried about the people who work there.
Yeah, and that's a legitimate concern.
Is it zealotry?
No. I think it's a legitimate concern. When you have documented cases of lung cancer from secondhand smoke, obviously it's a legitimate concern. But all of this is compromised, and I think Ryan Vaughn has set the parameters of this, so I think it'll probably be something less than a full and total ban, but frankly, it would be a huge improvement.
Well, what it means is that if you're a corner bar, you can no longer allow smoking.
Right, sure. Right. And I, you know, when you look at what the consequences of that are, if people want to smoke, they smoke in their own homes, hopefully not around any children. And if they want to kill themselves early, that's certainly their prerogative. But letting that smoke drift out to people who work in those establishments or even walk by the door is no longer acceptable, and that's good.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, does Indianapolis need a stronger smoking ban in time for the Super Bowl? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, and C, why is the Super Bowl a factor? Last week's question was, to what degree will Greg Ballard be at odds with the Democratic Council? 18% said he won't get anything done. 72% said there will be some middle ground. 10% said they will live in harmony. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Former Wayne Township School Superintendent Terry Thompson is now the target of a lawsuit. The school district accuses Thompson of misleading the district about his contract, a deal that will pay him millions. Thompson retired at the end of last year. The district claims that he deliberately misled the school board about the contents of his contract. The district says Thompson was able to boost his yearly income from $218,000 in 2003 to more than $2 million in 2010. District leaders say Thompson's behavior was criminal and he should be ordered to repay triple what he was paid. Thompson released a statement calling the lawsuit totally inappropriate. He says it's a school board's duty to review and ratify contracts such as his, which was negotiated with the board and its legal counsel, John Schwannis. Is this a case of closing the barn door after the horse is gone?
A horse is, well, of some sort. Yeah, I don't know. I'll leave the editorial comment aside. This is one of those things where nobody comes out looking good. Clearly, Terry Thompson, the facts are the facts. He was making $218,000 and then was making, $2 million plus a few years later. There was some manipulation of the system. Somebody somewhere did something that doesn't smell very good. However, a board is supposed to have a fiduciary responsibility to, in this case, I presume, taxpayers and the parents and who send their children and entrust their children to be educated in this school district. And for them to say, well, we were kind of hoodwinked and we didn't read it, that doesn't make them look very good either. I mean, here's an analogy I would make. If you have a kid who, from kindergarten through senior year of high school, is allowed to make up his own assignments, you know, grade his own papers without any adult supervision, The kid's an idiot because he has no education, and the teachers are idiots because they abdicated their responsibility. So I don't think there are, in some ways, some parallels here, it seems to me.
Calling them idiots.
I said the kid who didn't, who, here's the classroom.
It's your inference there, Mr. Shella.
Well played, John. It's hard to find heroes here.
There are no heroes here. I think it is exactly what it appears to be. It is attempting to save face after the board clearly was derelict in its duty. It has the ultimate authority to handle these things. And really this is on an order of magnitude that's much greater than I think any of us can imagine. But really, are school boards in Indiana doing what they should be doing if this kind of thing happens? And that's really, I think, it's a real concern. We talk about the reform of education. We ought to look at how we operate the enterprise of education, and in this case it clearly broke, and to allege that it's the principal's fault, or the superintendent's fault,
Is he culpable in some fashion? Probably, but he's not the ultimate authority here.
The
board is.
For the school board, it's got to be this is a tough suit to win, isn't it? I mean, the best they can hope for is for him to agree to a settlement to make the publicity go away, right?
Yeah, because, they signed it, okay? Did they not read it?
Yeah.
If they didn't understand it, did they ask questions about it? I mean, this does point out the fact how many, we have 299 school boards in this state, 298. That's about, at least 200 too many. And it's about time we started thinking about that because, some of these things are very complicated. Well, and asking lay people who do this part-time as a community service for very little money is not really realistic. So perhaps we ought to have consolidation.
Well, meantime, down in Franklin Township, you've got a circumstance now where the Attorney General has issued an opinion saying that their decision to charge for bus service is unconstitutional, and they're preparing to go to court because they want to defend that. It's not been a good week for school boards.
No, and they're probably going to lose that one, and it's a situation where parents have a right to be up in arms over that deal. I mean, that's going to come back to haunt the Franklin Township school system.
But they can do it other ways, though. They can come back and say, okay, we're not going to charge for the buses. We're going to charge for extracurricular activities and band and everything
else. And I'm guessing
else.
You'll have a new school board next time.
Well, that may be.
You know what's sad about this whole
thing?
But
they're stuck with property taxes.
Especially the Terry Thompson situation. This is a time when there's a lot of attention on public schools and a lot of critics saying that they've dropped the ball and we need to throw them aside in favor of you name your poison,
whichever poison.
And so this is not the vast majority of school officials in public schools, I'm sure, are struggling to get by and do more with less. And when you see these kinds of unfortunate situations, it just is a black eye for the institution as a whole. And that's what's sad.
Occupy Indy protesters were told to leave the State House encampment this week or face arrest. At the end, there were about six demonstrators, and all of them were packing up their items in compliance with the state order. Wednesday afternoon, the Department of Administration gave them 24 hours to remove tents, tarps, sleeping bags. Because of safety concerns, demonstrators were told they can still assemble but cannot set up campsite items, and there are apparently still some of them there, but with only a few items. Ann Delaney, did that protest accomplish anything?
Well, I think it called attention, as the protests around the country have, to the abuses that we've seen from the banks and Wall Street. I really do think it has. And I frankly think the Department administration handled that very well. I think they ought to be allowed to protest there and gather there, but sleeping and putting tents up, I think, was inappropriate. So I thought that actually was very well handled.
Much less brouhaha here than in other cities of this
size.
Yes,
the crowds were small, but the problem was when you start to set fires, even though they were trying to do it to keep warm and those kinds of things, there was a public safety problem there, and I agree that the Department of Administration handled it very well.
There were, I think there have been three arrests. Is there a way to, do you think that's overzealous, arresting these people?
Well,
I mean, it's, for protesting, no. But when there are issues about safety issues or a failure to heed the warnings of law enforcement, or in some cases, I'm not saying these people assaulted law enforcement, but certainly we've seen that around the country.
Maybe their tent was
their castle. Well, let me help you. Actually, in at least one case,
there was
somebody trying to get arrested.
That happens.
Well, then they just helped them out. What's your complaint there?
You know what I find interesting in a lot of these situations? We saw it in Milwaukee a few weeks ago. We saw it again this week in New York. A lot of journalists, particularly photographers, are being arrested along with the protesters. And I know you think that's okay, but the reality is these people are clearly identified. They're doing their jobs. They're performing an important function, and they're being rounded up like common criminals, and I think that that's because the officials think that they can, and I'm worried about that.
Well,
it hasn't happened here.
It's just like what's happening in Syria, which bans any foreign journalists or any pictures being taken of what's going on in there. So there are,
reminds me of
concerns.
The original Occupy the State House protest about, 15 years ago, when a young lady, an elderly woman from the northern part of the state, camped out on a bench outside the Senator House chambers. And stayed there, I don't know how many days.
For days.
She occupied it, and she ultimately, as I recall, was...
She was arrested,
forcibly removed, and so she was the matriarch, I guess, of this whole movement.
I don't think they were trying to imitate her, since they didn't know about it.
Finally, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice visited Indianapolis this week. She signed copies of her new book, No Higher Honor. It's a memoir of her years in the Bush administration, and she gave a luncheon speech offering observations about foreign policy. In an interview, she made it clear she loves football, and in the past, she's looked for alternatives to her Cleveland Browns.
Colts used to be one of those because I'm a big Peyton Manning fan. I know there have been a lot of injuries, and it's very hard when you have to overcome a lot of injuries.
Mike McDaniel, she's given up on the Colts. She came to town to tell us that she gave up.
So far, she's given the best explanation I've heard. Actually, she is a huge football fan, and she's a Stanford Cardinal, so if she can help us get Andrew Luck, I'm all for that idea.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was glad to see her come. The second time she came. She came to the Women's Final Four because Stanford played in that, too. I just wondered why she did her book signing at the Republican headquarters, because I might have bought the book if it were at a neutral location.
Really?
I guess no borders is closed.
Yeah, you can still buy
well, I know, but I mean to have it autographed.
Oh, I see.
But I wasn't going there.
When you sign copies of for this week, our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Hey guys, there's your trivia. Myra,
I was trying to...
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.